mind. Do you think that he achieved the magnum opus? Because one thing that's always stood out to me is there is a specific string of words for every human being that will destroy you. Think, and I don't know if destroy means maybe perhaps killing you off physically, biologically, or the way I like to see it, it's like you dissolve out of existence, right? You connect the dots that you weren't supposed to connect and you fizzle out of existence. I mean, think of all these ancient civilizations that just got up and disappeared, right? The Mayans, Mohenjo-Daro, all these places. Was that part of it where they were interacting with things that they maybe weren't supposed to be interacting with? Because look at Nietzsche. He went insane. Jung kind of sort of went insane. You know, looking into the darkest crevices of reality itself and of the mind.
He went insane. Yeah, he went insane on purpose, you could say, and found his way back so that he could guide his patients and guide the rest of humanity in what that process might look like. That's what the Red Book is basically somebody choosing to engage with very chaotic unconscious contents, which is something that somebody who's suffering from like a psychosis might do. They might be wrestling with characters inside of themselves that feel as real as everything in their external world. But in the process, by doing it in this willful and conscious way, the way that Jung did it, you end up learning a tremendous deal about yourself, about your weaknesses, about your strengths. And also, if you're doing it for the aim of growing as an individual and spiritually as well, then it's an incredible experience. But to riff off of some of the things you mentioned, so one thing you mentioned about Seven Sermons to the Dead, he wrote that much earlier than when he did finally pass. What may have been gotten confused there was a work he finished and shortly after he passed, which was most likely in reference to Man and His Symbols.
Okay.
That was the last book, and that was a joint effort between him and his colleagues. So that's most likely what maybe the wires got crossed, someone mentioned there. But Seven Sermons to the Dead, he wrote that early on. He wrote that that probably would have been in the 1920s, and he lived for a number of decades after that. And the reason we know this is because this was a very unique work in that he didn't credit himself as the author. He credited this Gnostic saint or Gnostic prophet named Basilides as the author. And he was so proud of this work that he had done that felt like a channeled work that he shared it with friends. It's like one of these few little things that he printed from that Red Book experience he had. And he would give it to certain colleagues and be like, hey, check this out. Isn't this crazy in a way? And so we know that there's a definite timeline of, you know, when that happened. And then in regards to some of these other things you're talking about, so many neurons firing.
Sorry,
when you were
bro.
Talking. No, it's all good. It's all good. It's fun. So the idea with Jung and whether the practicality of the things he's engaging with, you can look at something like the Red Book, and some people will call it a psychological work. It's an exploration of somebody's deeper layers of their psychology, of their psyche. And then some people will say, this is a purely spiritual work. This is something that you'd run into if you were reading an Islamic mystic text, or somebody who practices Kabbalah and they're exploring, you know, their inner realms and stuff. But really, it's both. It's Jung is a psychologist, and he's exploring elements that are within the fabric of spirituality and spiritual experience. And I don't think even he would narrow it down to say it's only psychology or it's only spiritual. Because at the beginning, at the outset of that journey in the book, he's looking for his soul. It's very specific. It's very deliberate language. He's looking for his soul. He finds his soul and he starts a dialogue with it. The rest after that is a combination of spirituality and psychology.
Yeah, and that, like I said, that looking into the inner, and I know you had tried you explained your vision, which was really bizarre too, and it's almost like when he's being told to extract the liver of the boy, right? And the liver is
right.
interesting because the liver is right, the liver, it's almost like where they had pierced Jesus on the side, right? Like that area there, is that where the liver is? Let me make sure. That was it, the
liver
liver?
Might be lower.
Anyway,
it was the liver, but I don't know if it was Jesus being pierced in the liver, but he was pierced in the lower ribs in that area.
So let's before we, because I've heard the liver is essentially, they call it the liver because it keeps you alive. So like the, you know, like the liver, Jesus.
Yeah, traditionally the organs, yeah, various organs have associations. I believe I've heard the liver referred to as the seat of the soul.
Yes.
In more ancient traditions.
Let me see here. Is it the liver?
That yeah, and there was here? A specific vision he engaged with where, yeah, just to give context to listeners, where Salome, this female figure he's in dialogue with, instructs him to extract or cut out the liver from this dead child, basically.
Yeah, which is right.
It's one of the darker visions in the book. Yeah,
which Salome is also an interesting character, and that links to John the Baptist. Yeah. But yeah, so the side work kind of sort of near the liver, right? And then also, oh, I think
it is within the ribs. Okay, I thought it was lower.
Prometheus is also condemned to having his liver eaten nonstop, yes, as a curse.
Totally.
Right? That was his whole thing. By the, it would, yeah, regenerate every single. All right, so the liver, right? An interesting piece, an interesting organ. You have Galen thought as well, where they believe that if certain parts of the body held certain aspects, are you saying, were the seat of the soul. And also, I'm just thinking, because this involves the Gnostics as well, which is what I first got into when I started podcasting. It was a lot of Gnosticism. And oh, yeah, the reason, right, Gnosis is an interesting concept because there is nothing written about it. There is nothing. It's one of those mysteries where it's like, what was Gnosis? Well, it's whatever is sacred to you. And I'm just thinking about, right, we're talking about Jung looking into his innermost parts of his psyche or soul, whatever he was looking for. And almost like, what if that's what the Gnostics were up to as well? Because they were using mandalas. There is spells and incantations that we have of the Gnostics that we don't know what they were for, almost like a glossolalia. And again, it goes back to the whole text itself, the being the living word in some sort of way. And what if that sucks you in, right? What if that is like what you melt into? Because writing, I've always looked at, you mentioned the creativity aspect of it all. Well, you have Michael Myers with his Atlanta Fugians, where he combines alchemy, these plates, with poems, where with a story,
right.
with music on top of it all. So there's something about that trinity that is, I believe, sucks people. And that's why media is so powerful as well. That's why video and movies are so powerful. These cinema magicians, that they use this. And I want to get your opinion on this, because you have a lot of people who, right, so Jung really introduced the concepts of the archetypes and how it, at the core level of all these Disney movies and all the things that we know and love, there's the archetypes, these core concepts that resonate with us on a deeper level. Maybe that's ingrained into our DNA. Who knows? But you have people who will argue against, and I believe, this is my personal idea and I want to get your opinion on this, that the elites, and by the elites, I know you don't like the lizard people, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard you reference.
I love the lizard people.
I've heard you reference.
People who dress like lizards is great for Halloween.
Yeah, whatever you want to dress up. But the idea of these reptilian overlords is what I call them, if they are lizards or not.
Oh, okay. Reptilians, right.
That they use these concepts to manipulate the psyche of humanity and of civilizations and of nations and of people as a whole. You have people who will argue against that. Like, no, the elites don't use these symbols. They're just, this is just what they make, and this is just coincidentally falls in line with these archetypes. You know, the elites don't use symbology for evil purposes and sinister things. It's like there's a reason why they use the symbols that they use, and okay, a majority might be using them to be edgy, right? Because it looks cool. I like the Ouroboros. It's a cool symbol. I like the Eye of Providence. It's a cool symbol. I like the pyramid. It's a cool symbol. But do you believe that they might be using these? What are your thoughts on that? Could they be using them to manipulate people in some negative sort of MK Ultra type of way?